And that then does become culturally nationalist. That then does become, well, it's just, I mean, it's so much less than it could be. If the process continues and is ongoing and is ever more contradictory and complicated, which is an utterly exhausting thought,
mm-hmm.
but it seems to me the only possible, honorable approach.
Right.
Tired as it makes one. Then all kinds of things, I think, will begin to occur to us that would have seemed inconceivable before, as has already happened on other levels.
Mm-hmm.
But the spiral just goes on and on and on. And sometimes when I will see a whole counterculture springing up, I'll think, I just will get very depressed. I mean, for one example out of many, at certain points of the year, one will now get mailings from, you know, feminist alternative businesses, say around Christmas. And it will, this little mailing will say, "We stock winter solstice cards. Don't observe the patriarchal holidays, observe the winter solstice." Now, the first time that I, you know, got such a mailing, I thought, well, that's really marvelous. I mean, right. I have not observed patriarchal holidays in some time, and I do observe matriarchal ones, and the cross-quarter days, and the four great feasts, and the Sabbaths, and so forth. And that's wonderful that, you know, I mean, fewer and fewer people are going to be plugging into this atrocity that is actually originally based on Isis giving birth to Horus, forgive me,
right.
All you Christians out there, but this what has become this absolute atrocity of Christmas or Easter or any of the consumer holidays, and we're going to reject that outright. They are not going to celebrate the birth of the eternal phallic Christ. But then what begins to happen, Viv, when there's a whole sub feminist business in winter solstice cards?
Mm.
So that soon people will be, instead of sending out Christmas cards, sending out stacks of winter solstice cards, stacks of winter solstice presents, doing our winter solstice shopping, or spring, or
right.
There's something really, I mean, I don't think in our struggle and our search for transcendence that we can ever lose sight of the enormous capacity for corruption and co-optation of the patriarchal culture in which we do, as of this moment in time space, after all, live.
Yes.
And it is infectious.
Yes.
And it just really scares me. I could begin to see in 5 or 10 years a whole, you know, feminist subculture in which Easter and Christmas and Mother's Day and Father's Day. I mean, all these things got translated into, the names have been changed, but the content is really the same. And the content has to change utterly. But that is a cut loose point. That's stepping off the edge of the precipice. And we do that in lots of different ways.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It will be very difficult. I think the best that we can expect is that is to achieve what is necessary within ourselves, personally, each woman unto herself, and then just pray for the rest of them.
Well, of course, I mean, you obviously, I can tell from your expression, I mean, you know the dangers in
yeah.
that too.
Yeah.
That, you know, it can sound, I know that's not what you're saying. I mean, it can sound like the personal solution. It can sound like, well, you know, number one. But I think that there has to be a balance between that and the other, because I know just in my own life I have gone in violent polar pendulum swings back
mm-hmm.
and forth from focusing on my own struggle
mm-hmm.
to being doormat for what, you know, whatever was needed of me by the people at any given moment.
Right.
And then finding in myself a tremendous reservoir of bitterness because I was not getting anything, any input, any support, I mean, I was becoming solely a tool.
Mm-hmm.
didn't mind being a tool, want to be of use, want, I think we should in that sense, in a high sense, be tools for each other.
Right.
But that has to be very carefully done, and then one has to take care of each other's tools, you know, and give them rests and give them love, and so that I'm trying to, you know, walk a tightrope of balance now between my own personal political aesthetic needs and those of my sisters, and it's very difficult, as you obviously know too. It took me a long while to realize something that you said earlier, to realize that my own work was of value to my sisters. In other words, that it was not an either or.
Mm-hmm.
Either one writes or one is out picketing, so forth and so on. Well, I mean, sometimes what is communicated in a poem is one read by more people than 1,000 speeches,
mm-hmm.
and two, reaches more people and sticks in the minds of more people than standing on a street corner leafleting illegible mimeographed leaflets for 10 years. And it heightens the contradictions, the struggle, the seriousness, the intensity, the complexity. But to learn to be proud of that and not guilty because, oh my God, I was sitting at my typewriter and I should have been out at 16 meetings, was a real struggle. And still is not completely solved. The guilt is enormous. To realize, in other words, that one's political work is indissolubly the same as one's aesthetic work, and that both are the reason one is existing,
right.
and why one doesn't slit one's throat and be done with it. That's a very, it seems an obvious fact, but I cannot believe the time that goes into realizing it.
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to say just before. It's important to come to that conclusion before mm-hmm. before you can settle down and do anything.
Yes.
Getting back to the Ms. article, I urge anybody who is hearing this who has not already purchased a copy of Monster to run right out and do it. This article in Ms. was the first thing I had ever read of yours that was not poetry as such, in quotes.
Oh,
stamped poetry. And I found it just beautifully poetic. The way it flows from thought to thought, the way you've developed it, I was, you know, really impressed with. And there are bits and pieces of it that I almost want to cut out and hang on my wall, because they're just there is one point in here during which you speak of the lesbian straight split,
mm-hmm.
And various people's reactions to that, and then you talk about the fact that this drove some lesbians back into the gay movement,
mm-hmm.
Whereupon their male counterparts thrust mimeograph machines at it. that was one of the most incredible images, I think, that any piece in Ms. Magazine has ever given me. So I'm really, really eagerly looking forward to reading more things like this from you.
Well, that's the witch book that we talked about earlier is fiction, but the Ms. article that you're talking about now is part of a sort of series of essays, actually, which I've been putting together for, about a year, and which will also be out fall of 76, around the same time as the second book of poems. Now, this is a book of essays, and the working title, which I like and I think I'll stick with, is Going Too Far. Because it seems to me that at every time in my development I have, risen to another level of consciousness or crashed through to another reality, somebody has always said, oh, now, just a minute, this time you're going too far. And it's always, of course, been never far enough. And that book is a collection of essays written from 1966 through to the present on feminism, and includes this kind of thing that you've been discussing. The funny thing is that I have literally, well, I've left them warts and all, and you have to realize, Vivian, remember, I came out of the the left, and I was very correct. So that I have left in there all the early essays from the late 60s in which I'm sort of saying, well, this women's movement, these women, they have an interesting idea, but of course they don't have any serious theory, and I have to, you know, really help them along with some genuine Marxist thought. I mean, they do have an important thing or two to contribute to the movement, by which I meant whatever men defined as the movement, the revolution. But basically, feminism is a petty bourgeois concept. Now, of course, I get really sweaty palms and I, you know, double over with alternate waves of laughter and paralysis of embarrassment as I am assembling this book of essays, and I think to myself, oh, I don't want to include that one. Do I have to include that? Maybe sisters have mercifully forgotten I ever said something like this. But I have decided to leave them in because I think, well, first of all, there are a lot of sisters who are still saying things like that, and perhaps it will help nudge them along to say something a little more refreshingly new. And secondly, you know, it is part of one's process, and one shouldn't revise history, one's own, or history in general. So what I've done is intercut the older essays with little mini prefaces that I'm writing now, which I tell the real story of what was happening behind the scenes in my own life while I was writing this silly, idiotic stuff saying that feminism really, you know, wasn't serious or bourgeois. Meanwhile, my own life was going to shards and fragments because of feminism, which I wasn't taking seriously, of course. And then the book goes up straight through Goodbye to All That, when I left the left, and then through the radical feminist essays and so forth, and ends with a piece on metaphysical feminism. So it really is like the process of a female soul, one of many, to the present time. And this article, I think, could not have been written, the article Rites of Passage that appeared in Ms., had I not already been doing a lot of nostalgic and reference work into those old essays, and being, in a very humbling fashion, carefully reminded of how one gets anywhere from anywhere else through a lot of pain and a lot of self and other deception, and then peeling away those layers like an onion skin, and gradually getting at different layers of truths, or layers of the truth. And I'm pleased at the person I was, even so. I mean, I disagree with her politics in many of her transformations, more than I can say. But I do really like her. I mean, sometimes I look at those old essays and I want to really go back in time and embrace her sitting at that typewriter and pounding out, you know, dogmatic assertions that women must, so forth and so on, in terms of Engels, Marx, Mao, Che, or various other of the boys, and embrace her and say, oh, my dear, you know, you needn't be so afraid. You know, I mean, women will be able to figure it out. I mean, you just calm down. You know, calm down and admit you're in pain, for one thing, Robin. Yeah. You know, and I can't go back to her, but it's comforting to know that there was something brave and intrepid and wanting to be honest and wanting to trust and daring to be vulnerable to other women that saved me into feminism. I see that happening to women all the time. I have for years, and I expect to continue seeing it, not only from the left, but from the right, the male right, the male middle, the male, you know, the patriarchy, the miracle occurring again and again. And that's a renewal that has extraordinary power.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the centuries-long battle, let's say, between the theologically between, say, the Roman Catholic Church and the Protestant churches. I mean, centering around is the Mass simile or is it metaphor? I mean, is the blood and body actually present
or is
it a metaphor for? And one could say that the feminist miracle is actually present every time every single woman makes a connection, makes a click, realizes, oh, well, why did he say that to me? Wait a minute. Or, that's unjust. Or, I don't see why I have to do that. Or, Herman, pick up your sock. Or, you know, what I mean, on the most, quote, petty level, which we know doesn't exist,
right.
To the most, what can appear, complicated, metaphysical one, those are miracles. And it all gets very tied up then for me, because I think that the feminist vision is potentially a miraculous one. I think that art, for me at least, is a process of miracle. And so for the first time now, finally, in my mid-30s, I feel a strange, almost alien coming together of things that I think may be a feeling of wholeness. I just feel very alien, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
Not familiar at all. And yet it feels sort of good, which is what I tried to say in that article. I mean, I think maybe it's maturity. it's very scary.
Very scary.
I don't know.
One thing that gives me more hope than probably anything else to have come out of the women's movement is an incident that took place after the Equal Rights Amendment had been defeated here in New York and in New Jersey. I was called by a friend who had been doing the press relations for the coalition, New York Coalition for Equal Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara Walters was planning on doing a five-part series on our Not for Women Only program on the Equal Rights Amendment nationally. And the taping was going to be like 2 weeks after Election Day. And, of course, one of the panelists was Phyllis Schlafly.
Yes.
Now, before the Equal Rights Amendment had been voted on, I promised myself that if it passed, I would never sit through another debate with Phyllis Schlafly on the panel again. But, of course, it didn't, and I felt obliged to go.
Mm.
And it was just as horrible as I had expected it to be. She said all the things that she usually says, and that there was a lot of flailing around about toilets and...
And the draft?
The draft.
Truly relevant issue, yes.
And alimony and so forth and so on. And it wasn't until, I think it was a commercial break in between segments of the program, that I discovered that she was talking with someone else on the panel or someone in the audience or something. Phyllis Schlafly is going to law school.
Ah.
Now, part of me says, oh, God, now she's going to have more ammunition to fight us with. And part of me says, wait a minute. I said, could Phyllis Schlafly have gone to law school 5 years ago?
Mm-mm.
Would she have ever thought of going to law school?
Of course not.
So even in our defeat, we have victory.
Yes.
There is indeed no turning back. Everything is working.
That's true.
It just works very slowly, and I just have to learn to be patient and to see You know, to see the victories for what they are and see the defeats for what they are.
Yeah.
But there is actually
hope.
That
is very interesting because I think you're quite right. I mean, I think she's an excellent example of a woman who's quite bright,
mm-hmm.
with tremendous public presence, charisma, whatever
mm-hmm.
you want to call
mm-hmm.
it, an acquired self-confidence, a crusading spirit. I mean, one could think of a whole lot of very true and positive things. And she's a good speaker, and
mm-hmm.
she has been very brave in, you know, putting forth and in building that view. It's true she has been well-financed by the Catholic Church and the Birchers,
sure.
but that is beside the point. They could not have done it without her
mm-hmm.
and her image. And the irony is, I mean, and I think this would be true of any idea which was larger even than its movement,
mm-hmm.
which feminism is,
mm-hmm.
That they would not have been so successful without a Schaffley, and a Schaffley, per se, even before law school, even without law school, could not have existed, say, 5 or 6 years ago. In other words, there are ways in which she holds her body,
mm-hmm.
her body language itself,
mm-hmm.
which is feminist language.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain lack of fear,
mm-hmm.
a certain carriage to the shoulders, which
right.
is woman pride. Yes, what, you know, what is heartrending is that Schaffley doesn't know she owes it to us, right? But then we sound, you know, like classic mothers saying, well, you know, I mean, you pay your debt. I mean, you're not grateful,
yeah.
you
right.
awful child. And, you know, that's not why the consciousness goes out. The point is that every woman has a right gulp to use this, you know, in any way she chooses.
That's right.
And there's going to be some pretty awful ways in some of our views and even some very, very good ways that fail, and then others that make it, some bad ways, in other words, that succeed, some good ways
yeah.
that fail, and then also vice versa. So that, I can get very optimistic, and I allow myself my optimism, because when I get pessimistic, I really allow myself that,
yes.
too.
Yes, yes, it is possible to wallow in pessimism for a good long time.
I mean, the Now Convention, for example, that you mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
I went to. Now, this was the first Now Convention I'd ever attended, and I went. I was reading a poem, giving a poetry reading, and I knew. In fact, I knew ahead of time that there was quite a considerable split, and that there was a very intense election fight going on and so forth. And I was not unpartisan. In fact, I was quite partisan toward one side, although I'm not a Now member,
mm-hmm.
so I couldn't vote. But I, you know, certainly felt strongly that Karen DeCroo and the majority caucus deserved election and re-election, rather re-election and election, respectively. And that there should be more grassroots representation in Now, etc. Even though I felt there were mistakes that group had made as well as the other. But the thing is that I went away from that convention, yes, of course, depressed at the infighting, at some of the dirty tricks that went on, etc. And even at the form, I mean, that there was all that parliamentary procedure and that there were on the convention floor in that huge building. It was just like I'd seen television, you know, coverage of Democratic and Republican
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
conventions. It was all those chairs and little flags up saying, Pennsylvania delegation here, Wyoming delegation,
right, right.
and walkie-talkies, caucus in room 602. You know, very freaky, and part of me would think, male forms, male forms. I mean, this is really, there's 6,000 women here, and they are functioning in total male form. Yet, that's not true. And the strongest thing I came away with was the staggering number of 6,000 women. That's one thing.
Yeah.
The spectrum of women,
mm-hmm.
age, race, class, etc., etc.,
mm-hmm.
16-year-old women in jeans and combat boots, 70-year-old women in, you know, dresses, with the housewives in pink pants suits, the movement heavies running around with their, you know, deep sunglasses in the middle of the night. Yeah, I mean, on and on and on. And an energy, an incredible energy that was present there. That was very exciting, was undeniable, and that wherever the conference forum exists, and I don't think it's necessarily the most fruitful, whether it's Mexico City or whether it's a NOW convention or whatever, nonetheless, you get women together and talking, and something creative is going to happen out of that. Maybe it won't happen at the conference halls. Maybe it really happens at 3 a.m. when everything's broken up and groups of 2s and 3s and 5s have gone to coffee shops and sit talking till 6 a.m. Maybe that's where the real thing goes on. But when women are coming somewhere from all over a country to meet and to talk and to scream and to cry at one another, there is an energy and a dynamic set in motion that is atomic. And that's what I ultimately came away with. I was very glad I went. And that is not to deny any of the ugliest things that happened there.
Sure.
But the other was even realer. And the other is what will endure. And if the historical perspective somehow is grasped and is held to, then one realizes, one gets very optimistic, because it's basically been 7-8 years, this wave of feminism. And good grief, I mean, look where we have come. It is, forgive me, a long way.
Yeah.
Absurdly short in terms of what our vision is reaching for.
True.
Ridiculous in those terms. But in terms of a historical movement, in terms of numbers, in terms of progress, in terms of life-saving measures, via rape crisis centers, via abortion reform, via a whole lot of things that are not enough, never enough, never to be forgotten, not enough. Still, lives saved, lives changed, whole individual, unique, precious existences forever altered for the better. And that's incredible.
That was why I went to that conference. I went with the express intent of registering, getting my voting card, and then losing it in a pocket somewhere. And I spent most of the 3 days I was there looking up old friends, going out for coffee, you know, getting together with 3 or 4 people and having dinner, just to renew friendships that I have built within the movement in other places.
Yes.
And to exchange I spent very little time on the convention floor itself. And although it was impossible to get away from the heavy political infighting and machinations, I mostly ignored it. And for that, I found the conference to be a rather good experience.
Did you find that when you encountered people you hadn't seen, say, in a while, that sometimes wondrously, by this mysterious synchronistic process, that they had gone through similar, if not identical, changes and were in a place very parallel to where you were?
Oh, absolutely.
You hadn't even seen them in X amount of time?
Absolutely. That's the wondrous thing about it, is that we are all progressing at basically the same rate, and we will all end up in the same place.
Where is that? Oh, Vivian, tell me.
I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to keep it from you.
Oh, all right.
let you wonder about it. No, I wish I knew. I wish I knew where it would be, but I do know that it is someplace good.
Well, it's funny, because I have these ongoing teleological discussions with my mad Celtic friend, Mary Daly. She said something about our, as feminists, our having already embarked through feminist time-space in a metaphorical spaceship. And I said something about where is the destination, and there was this silence, at which point Mary... The silence somehow reminded me of the fact that Mary has 7 degrees, I think 4 of which are doctorates. And I knew I had made a faux pas, and came across the phone, this professorial voice suddenly saying, I don't think, Robin, that that's really... the right question. And I thought, oops, I have been caught with a goal-oriented question.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shame, shame, shame. It's getting there. That's half the fun. And it may be all the fun
all
for
the
all
fun.
We know.
All the fun. Well, we have gotten to the end of this program. I will invite you back many more times.
I should love to come. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
I hope that you will have the personal time and space to come, because of all the programs we've done so far on over a year of women's studies, this I hate to call this program important, or last week's program important, but I think they were.
Well,
and
thank you.
I thank Robin Morgan for joining us. I thank you for listening, and we will see you next week. I'm Viv Sutherland.
Studies came to you on recording over WBAI New York. The time is 4:00, and you're tuned to WBAI New York.